Some of my most cherished moments of ministry occurred during my 2.5 years serving as a hospice chaplain before I began serving as a pastor in the congregational setting. During this time, I had the honor of accompanying people through their final days and hours of life, as well as their loved ones walking with them. Holding folks' sorrow with them is very, very bittersweet, but I'm incredibly grateful for the opportunity to have done so. The work of a chaplain, if you're not familiar, is very similar to being a pastor. The work of accompaniment, of walking with folks throughout life's journey. But a chaplain serves in a secular setting, not in a church or a religious organization. The holy space is not a church building or a synagogue or a mosque, but rather right in the middle of someone's home, a kitchen table, a living room, or at a person's bedside. Sometimes it doesn't even include religious conversation or any mention of any God, but rather it's work that tunes into a person's inner world, what they valued and found most important, as well as their closest and often most complex relationships. It was the ministry of presence, right in the heart of life's most precious and fleeting moments. Some of the most important tasks of being present with folks who are preparing to die or who love someone who is preparing to die is offering permission. Permission to be honest, to be angry, to be devastated, and oftentimes relieved. Of course, I have no actual power or authority to give permission to anyone to do anything in those situations. But you know how sometimes you don't know that you're holding your breath until someone reminds you to breathe? It's kind of like that. Because sometimes that was God, sometimes it wasn't. I was often surprised by the ways people would share with me, a complete stranger, so very intimately. Stories about regrets, about trauma that they have hidden and maybe never even told anyone, about shattered dreams or relationships that they wished they had mended. And as we would explore these things together, sometimes that permission to share would turn into then a facilitating end-of-life discussions with loved ones. Because sometimes it takes facing death things to finally ask for or offer forgiveness, to say, I love you for the very first time. I could not believe how many people I would meet who would say, you know, they never said I love you, but I know that they loved me. So sometimes that happened for the very first time. We are such complex people with complex stories, and our stories are rarely, if ever, straightforward. So I would often be the one in the room to gently name that elephant, to broach the topic, to support the person who desired to seek resolution and closure, or at times to literally translate for people what the other is saying. Because sometimes we just completely miss each other and we don't even know it's happening. Sometimes that looked like asking, what do you want these folks to know as you leave them? What do you want to say to this person as their life comes to a close? What is left undone? Is there anything left unspoken or something to be worked out? Because all we have is this moment in this one precious and wild life. So let's be here now together. And by God's grace, when people engaged in this work, when they had the courage to say and do the thing, I was able to witness indescribable healing, reconciliation and people giving them permission, themselves permission to be real. Saying the thing, doing the thing while he had the time. That is what we find Jesus doing in this particular scene. We've traveled with him throughout his final week together. This Lent, we decided to focus in, to zoom in on Holy Week rather than waiting until Holy Week to walk with Jesus through that. But first, we joined him in that parade into Jerusalem the week of Passover. We witnessed him flipping over tables, overwhelmed with righteous anger from witnessing the way the religious system was working. We watched religious leaders use their religion to weaponize Jesus, to catch him in his words and get him arrested. And last week we joined with him and his disciples at the table when Jesus was anointed extravagantly, watching the ways that the fear of imminent doom made his disciples unable to see the beauty that was right in front of them. I can relate to that. You can look at the table and there are different pictures of this particular scene as artists have seen it. And today's is right over here, Jesus, and we're faithfully following him now. No, it's about the inner circle. Those he had discipled or trained up to carry on the work. The 12 disciples, including Judas, who had already set things in motion to betray Jesus into the hands of those who would eventually take his life. He recognized that the end had come for him, and this was his moment to share the final things, the most important things, that if nothing else was said, you would remember this thing. He knew this would be the last time to say what needed to be said, to express his love and care and compassion fully, to lay it all out for these folks who had walked faithfully with him for the past 3 years. Faithfully, not perfectly, might I add. They had witnessed and accompanied him in feeding very hungry people. They had been rebuked by him when they got things desperately wrong. He had empowered them to do signs and wonders as well. And now they were about to lose him, like tomorrow. They didn't understand the moment, but he did, and he was not going to lose this opportunity. So on this final night, he says what is most important. He tells them, "I love you." And he does so by washing their stinky, nasty feet. The sign of hospitality might gross us out, me included. But this was a norm in that society as folks' feet got dusty from traveling. Only the responsibility for actually washing the feet was the guests themselves. Or if you had the money, the work of the servants of your household. It was not a gesture of the host. It was not something that the teacher would do, and this responsibility certainly did not land on the shoulders of the guest of honor. But here we see Jesus, their leader and the guest of honor at this meal, taking up the water basin and the towel, bending in front of his friends and washing their feet one by one. None of them are comfortable with this, by the way. And Peter, precious Peter, who just can't help to be exactly who he is, right where he is, right when he is, objects to this outrageous act. It's not right. This isn't the way that things are done, Jesus. We have order. And while I'm not quite so sure we deserve this, not sure that I am worthy of this kind of service, Jesus. However, Jesus assures him that it must be done, that this was an invitation for those gathered into deeper relationship with him. Jesus tells him that he doesn't get the meaning of this now. Trust me. So then Peter goes the opposite direction. Okay, well, not just my feet then, just wash all of me, please. And Jesus says, Pete, it's not about the water. Being clean is not the point. Let me minister to you. Let me serve you. Commentator Gail O'Day wrote, Jesus asks nothing of the disciples other than that they place themselves completely in his hands, that they discard their images of who he is and how one comes to God and give themselves to his ministrations. That's it. Let me show you how much I love you, says Jesus, both in word and in action. It's only after he makes it absolutely clear that this gift was for them, does he turn back to them and tell them to embody this kind of servanthood themselves. He explains that just as he did this beautiful thing for them, they too are invited to show and express love in the same way by serving one another and washing each other's feet. Again, he explains, it's not necessarily the water that's important. It's what it means, what it represents. He would soon die and be returning to God from whom he came, and he wanted to invite them into the kind of depth of relationship that he had with God. The kind of love expressed, not by lording over or expecting reciprocity. That isn't love. But by giving. Your job, he says, is to love extravagantly just as I have loved you extravagantly. And that love doesn't come with caveats about worthiness or deservedness, because Jesus knew that Judas was going to betray him. He washed Judas's feet too. He knew Peter wasn't going to be able to keep it together when you know what hits the fan. And he even tells Peter he knows he's going to flake. He washes Peter's feet and even takes the time to assure him that he is worthy. He knows they're all going to run. But no matter what, Jesus's loving gaze remains. And they will be able to look back on this moment when all is said and done and know beyond a shadow of a doubt that he loved them, even them. They will understand this symbolic and generous act, even if they couldn't do so this night. And it would be the very love that would propel them into faithful works of their own. Well, everyone but Judas, whose life ends very, very tragically. But for most of them, it enables them to forgive themselves for the ways that they failed to show up for him in his greatest need. Because they knew that Jesus had already forgiven them for how they were going to respond. Imagine that. That love would lead them on to greater love. As Zach mentioned, a lot more is going to happen on this particular night. This is like part one quarter of the story of what happens. He had a lot more to say, a lot more explaining to do, a lot of words that he wanted them to remember, because this was that final meal, right? This is when he says all of the important things. If you don't catch anything else, I want you to remember this particular thing. But today we sit with love expressed in service. We allow ourselves to first receive the love as symbolized in water and an act of hospitality. Because we can only bear the coming hours as the disciples did when we know Jesus' love. So we have a little bit of time, and I want to invite you to explore this with me. Each week, we've been zooming in to each story to take us a closer look and to actually imagine ourselves in the story, where we might be, who we might be represented by. There's all kinds of folks in this picture. Where do you see yourself? How might you have responded if you were there? And what do you think it means to let Jesus love you? Are you able to actually believe that? Or, like Peter, is it a little too difficult to accept?